part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Registration is not required and individuals can join at any time. For more information, call 384-5829 or www.livingyogacenter.net.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back here to the program Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And starting in the spring through the summer into the early part of the fall, she is here once a month. It's always on a Tuesday, always on the second Tuesday. And we invite your questions about lawn and garden care. If you have questions about trees and shrubs, flowers, vegetable plants, house plants, if you're having a problem, call in and tell us, give us the best description, and Sandy will see if she can do a little diagnosis, or you have other kinds of questions. Maybe you'd like some suggestions on particular kinds of plants for a particular place in your yard. We can do some of that. And all you have to do is give us a call. 333-9455 here for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Pleased to have you here. Coming up now in our area over the next few weeks, we're going to have a bunch of garden walks, and maybe one we mentioned right up front is the Champaign County Master Gardeners Garden Walk. This will be on Father's Day, so take Dad, put him in the car, say, Dad, we're going
to
go look at some gardens. It's Sunday, June 20th, from 11 in the morning until 6 in the afternoon. You have to have a ticket, and it costs a few dollars, but if you are interested in going and, you know, seeing what other people have done with their gardens, maybe getting some ideas. And you know, the master gardeners are just nuts about it. They're just fanatics about gardening.
In a good way.
Oh, yes, of course.
In a socially acceptable way.
In a nice way. Yeah, so that's coming up on Sunday, June 20th. And then communities around Champaign-Urbana, some of the other places. You want to just mention?
Sure, I'll give you the rundown. And I'm sure wherever you are, there's probably a garden walk happening in June. Most of them happen in June. We do have one coming up June 13th, Sunday. Decatur, the Extension Master Gardeners over in Decatur, are having their garden walk on June 13th. And you can call the Extension office at 877-6042 for that one. June 19th, the Saturday, is Monticello's garden walk. And you can call the Chamber of Commerce there at 800-952-3396. And if you didn't get all these, I'll give these to David so if people don't end up all these questions. And then, of course, June 20th, the Champaign County Master Gardeners. June 27th is Muhammad's garden walk, and that'll be great. You can call 586-5066. And then also on June 27th is the Vermilion County Master Gardeners over in Danville. They're having their garden walk. So, you know, it really is a great opportunity to see what other people are doing. Plus, you know, usually this time of year, we all need a break from our own garden. We've just had so much fun, you know, weeding, planting, digging. Yeah. It's time to get away and just enjoy for a while.
Before the Japanese beetles get here.
Before the Japanese oh, sure, Mr. Pessimist.
Hey, well,
I
you know.
I know they come. It's a reality.
Yeah, they come.
It's a reality.
And Phil was here not very long ago. And, you know, he was last year we were really lucky. It was not for a lot of places. Now, I suppose some people would say, I had just as many any time.
Right.
But a lot of people said, well, that they noticed that there were fewer. And that had something to do with the fact that the previous winter had been cold enough, down deep enough in the soil, so that some of them were actually killed. And they didn't make it.
Sometimes cold winters are good things.
Yes. In this particular case, yes. Now, I think he was sort of saying, now, this winter was more like normal. So we probably will see a bazillion of them.
So enjoy it now. Is that what you're saying?
So enjoy it now before the Japanese beetles get here. Mm-hmm. And then you got to be watching. when the first ones, you need to go out there. And, of course, the easiest thing is just to go out there and pick them off.
Yeah. The scout.
Yeah.
You got to get rid of the scouts.
And because he also said that the thing about Japanese beetles is they like to feed where Japanese beetles have fed before them.
Yep.
So the more you can do to reduce that initial damage, then that means your plants will be less attractive to subsequent Beatles. So
right.
you got to kind of get on it right.
Yeah, you really
beginning.
Have to be vigilant in the very beginning. And usually we usually expect them toward the end of June. So we mm-hmm. should have a few weeks here, but really start looking probably around June 20th or so, really start looking for Japanese.
So first of all, you say, Dad, first of all, we're going to go out in the garden and look for Japanese Beatles.
Yeah, then we're going
to go on the garden walk. And then later you can grill us some chicken.
See?
What
the
a deal.
Day planned.
Isn't it? Aren't you dad? I think all the dads are out there saying, ooh, golly, I can hardly wait. Our lines are full. Let's talk with some folks who are listening. And Matt Toon is the first, and that's line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a lot of pin oak trees that are just covered in galls this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't leaf out it near as well either. It seems to be sapping a lot of strength out of them. Is there anything to do about that?
On the stems, you're saying you have galls? Or?
Yeah, the stems, mm-hmm. there's just mm-hmm. one after another. These galls as big as a golf ball with like thorns almost sticking out of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're just thick.
Yeah, unfortunately, there isn't really a whole lot you can do about galls. The timing has to be just right. And you could, you know, possibly spray for them. It'd have to be early in the season. You could possibly spray for them if you really felt like that it wasn't, you know, that the tree was really suffering. I'd almost bet the tree is suffering for other reasons, to be honest with you. Things like they're very intolerant of high pH soils, so they tend to get some iron deficiencies. Do they look halfway green, or the leaves? Or
some are green, some are yellowish green.
See, yellow-green is a good indication of iron chlorosis. Very common on pin oaks because we just don't have acidic enough soils. And I'd almost bet that's more likely why the tree's suffering rather than just the galls. Usually galls are, you know, they're kind of unsightly. Some of them are kind of cool, actually. But most of the time, it's just kind of an aesthetic thing. And usually, we don't see a whole lot of problems with the health of the tree due to galls. So I would be thinking about, you know, getting some what's called iron chelate on the soil. Be thinking about trying to get the pH down on the soil. And that's really going to help your pin oak the most.
Okay, oak.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the information.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let's go on to Chicago, I think. Line number 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I've got an easy one. Last Saturday on our educational station, this handyman said if you plant mint plants, flies and mosquitoes, they don't care to be in on your barbecues in the backyard. Is that a myth or is that really so?
If you plant mint, they won't bother you at your barbecues?
Yeah, he said mint plants, mosquitoes don't like the odor or be near mint.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, they've got scented geraniums and all these things called mosquito plants and all these things. And they really have looked at, you know, researching, trying to see if does this really help. And really what they found the most is that you just about have to be rolling around in the plant for it to really be helpful. Just having it, you know, several feet away isn't really going to help you a whole lot. It's a matter of proximity to the plant, plus if the volatile oils are actually being released. So unfortunately, sounds like a good idea, but unfortunately.
He even mentioned chewing mint gum, that they'd stay away from.
Well, good luck on that one, too. You could, like, hang pieces of the mint plant on you. Of course, probably nobody else would come around you, but it probably, you know, that might help.
All right, then, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, we see an awful lot of that, and unfortunately, it's one of those things where there's a little bit of truth to it, and unfortunately, it kind of gets expanded. And so do a little research on that stuff, or just enjoy the plants and not think about them too much being something that's going to keep the flies and mosquitoes away.
Okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. Line 2. Hello.
Hi. I've got some Rudbeckia, and not the Goldsturm with the smooth leaf, but the hairy leaf kinds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the plant will be looking fine, and 2 days later, it'll be just all shriveled up and dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like it's just wilted. The whole thing's wilted?
Right.
Have you pulled it up once it does that?
No,
or dug it up, or
no, I should, but I haven't. I've just sort of let them.
Yeah, the one thing that I've noticed with the black-eyed Susans, and even I've even seen it on Goldsturm, the ornamental one that we often purchase, is they get a root rot problem, And usually the reason I mentioned is to pull it up is that you find out real quick that when it's usually a good indication when it wilts that quickly, or maybe it wilts when the sun's out and then recovers the next morning.
Yeah,
that's often a good indication that either it's just plain old dry or it's got root rot problems and it just doesn't have enough roots to take up enough moisture. And I'd almost bet if you dig down or try to pull it up, it'll pull up real easy, like there's nothing attached.
So is this something that's going to spread to others? Do I have to be careful about how I dispose of the plants? Is it something in the soil? There are lots of them around that seem to be healthy. It's a very odd.
What I have found is that usually it seems to take out a few plants and doesn't necessarily take out the whole patch, because usually there's plenty of them that kind of reseed themselves and do their own thing. And so I would imagine, especially now that it's gotten a little bit drier, it probably occurred way back when we had a lot of moisture. So probably what's going to happen is you're going to lose a few here, and then you'll find that the rest of them are fine. It is a soil-borne kind of thing, so the only thing you could do if you really wanted to do something would be to use like a soil-drenched fungicide. And normally with these kind of plants, we wouldn't necessarily recommend that. But
yeah, they're too common. They sprout too often to have that to do that to the soil, I think.
Yeah, I think you'll find a few of them may die, but then the rest of them will be fine.
Okay, so unless it's really widespread, I'm just going to leave it alone.
Right, I think that's probably the best thing.
Great.
And it really is one of those kind of things where often the weather changes. We see this a lot, where the kind of weather kind of changes, and then the disease isn't as likely to go rampant because it's so dry.
That's a good thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, there's some advantage to dry.
See? Dry? Yep. Dry summers.
When I move the sprinkler, I'll
cold
think
winter.
About that.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Good luck.
Right, thank
Bye.
You. Let's go to Champagne. This is line number 3.
Oh, hello. Mm-hmm. I bought some, I planted dahlias for the first time last year, and I dug them up in the fall, and I put them in a shoebox with some dirt, and I wonder, how do I go, now they're all dried up, and I wondered how I go about replanting them.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any little sprouts or anything on them?
Cause you sprouts? Should,
yeah, little sprouts coming off of the roots.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Are they all shriveled up? And
the roots look, I'm looking. they look kind of shriveled. Did I do something wrong?
Well, it's tough. You know, dahlias are a little bit tough to get through the winter simply because they have a tendency to dry. It's kind of like if you've ever tried to store sweet potatoes for long periods of time, it's kind of the same thing. They have a tendency to dry out and they get kind of shriveled up. So sometimes during the winter time with dahlias especially, you might actually have to add a little bit of moisture either to the peat moss or whatever you've got them in because they shrivel up too much. Normally this time of year, you'd probably be seeing some little sprouts coming up from the roots.
These are dead?
They may be. I think what I would do is if you want to go ahead and plant them, it's certainly warm enough outside, if you want to just go ahead and plant them and see what happens, or at least get them into a warmer spot or whatever. I assume it's been plenty warm. What you may want to do is or just plant them in a pot real quick and just water them and then see what happens. But it's probably not a good sign, I will tell you that. It's probably not a good sign that they're not at least showing some sprouts or buds or something.
Is there something I should have done like next year?
Right. I would put them in. I think you're right on the money there as far as, you know, make sure that they don't freeze. That's one thing. They need to be cool but not too cool. And if you can put them in peat moss or sand or something like that and then check them periodically.
Add moisture.
Yeah, and then look at them in December and January. And if they're really starting to shrink and shrivel up, then you just add a little bit of moisture to the peat moss or whatever you have them in.
Uh-huh.
So you may have kept them a little too warm, too. That's the other thing I would wonder about.
Oh.
If they're in really warm temperatures, they'll dry out pretty fast too.
Okay.
So try it again, but
okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's see. We'll go next to a caller in Piatt County, and this would be on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello. Yes.
This year, I had a professional tree person pick out a prairie flame crabapple, and he planted it, and I think he did a really good job. And it's large, and it looks really stressed at this point. And I'm wondering, did I do something wrong, or should I leave it alone, or just keep it watered?
So it was planted this spring?
Yes, it was planted in April, and
with
a big hole, and it's a big tree. It had a huge root ball,
mm-hmm.
so I thought it might struggle a bit. But I think it says not to fertilize it, so I have done nothing but try to watch its moisture, and it's been so rainy, so I haven't really watered it a whole lot.
Right. Have you been watering it recently, though?
No. After the big rains, I...
Yeah, really, on new trees like that, actually for the first couple years, not even just the first year, but the first couple years, you really need to water them during drought periods, and that means, you know, once a week at least.
Okay.
They should be getting plenty of water once a week, and if it's really windy or really dry, it might even be twice a week, depending on, you know, what your soils are and those kind of things. But you really need, you know, get a little trowel or whatever and kind of check the soil. It should feel moist, and if it doesn't, then I'd sure be watering it.
How far down should you check, like 6 inches?
Usually we say 6 to 8 inches, but you'd only have to do that once. Usually you can, you know, after you water it, you check it before you water it, and then after you water it, for such a, you know, check how long you've been watering it and then see how long it takes to get it wet down to 6 to 8 inches. And then you don't only have to do that once and figure, okay, I need to leave it on for an hour or so.
Okay,
to make
and about
sure it's
once
wet.
A week then?
At least once a week. I would, again, depends on the soil and how hot it is, but when we have really warm temperatures like this and a lot of wind, you may find you're actually watering it twice a week.
Okay, and then my second question concerns that too, is because now a lot of perennials go on sale, and is it really too hot to plant them now? I mean, will they really struggle?
It's another one of those things that I think I've certainly done it, but you will have to make sure that you water them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not established, and certainly even though you put them in the soil and all that kind of stuff, they're not established, and so you're really going to have to water them again, probably once a week or so. Again, you wouldn't have to put as much water on a small perennial, obviously, but you are going to have to watch them and mulch them, too. I would, with the tree and the perennials and stuff, too, that'll help a lot.
Okay.
To make sure you put wood chips or something.
Okay, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Around our house last year, we planted a number of perennials, and it seemed that initially in their first year, they really didn't do all that well.
No.
Now they're looking better.
Right.
How long does it take, generally speaking, for them really to get established so that they will really do well and look like you would like them to look?
Right. Well, most perennials, you said, that first year, they kind of just sit there. But really what they're doing is they're putting out a lot of roots.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of stuff is happening there, but you don't really notice. They don't put in a lot of new top growth. And usually that second year, most of the perennials will get to the point where they're really looking pretty good. And certainly by the third year, they're really starting to flourish. But usually the second year, they're really... So you have to be a little bit more patient with most of the perennials, but it certainly can be done.
Our guest this morning, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month to talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions, you can call us. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we'll go next to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. A bunch of us in my husband's family have bought cemetery plots in a country cemetery that has no trees. And we bought them all together because we'd like to propose that we put in some trees.
Mm.
And we haven't had time to really look really hard to figure out what would work for the cemetery because they have concerns about being able to mow under them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a big budget. It's a little township cemetery. And they don't want something that's so big that its roots are going to disturb nearby coffins. We're going to have our ashes put in, so we figured there's plenty of room. But anyway, where would one look for that kind of information, or can you give us some suggestions?
So do they have size restrictions? I assume they might even have some.
They have no trees there at all.
So they don't really have any restrictions as far as planted or whatever?
We have to take it to the township commissioners and get it approved.
Now, are you looking for shade necessarily, or are you looking for just something to make it look a little bit nicer, or...?
I think we'd like to make it look nicer. We'd like to get something. We like trees, and we'd like to get something in there, recognizing that the cemetery has some valid concerns. They don't pay somebody very much to mow, and so they want something that's not going to cause them more expense or hardship. They don't want to have a lot of leaves to rake up, et cetera.
Well, I would think, you know, usually... pretty good bet are a lot of the crab apple trees because you can find some that are disease resistant. You'd always want to select one that's resistant to apple scab. That's a common disease around here, and you know they're nice and they have the spring flowers. And you can get just about any size you want. Most of them aren't going to get above like 45 feet or so, so they're not going to be huge trees. So trees that are very doable, I think, for the most part. And you could do a nice sort of cluster of three of them or something in one area. area, and it would really give a lot more impact than having like one tree here and one tree there and one tree over there, especially if there's no other trees. Does that make sense?
It could.
So you could have in like sort of a bed area where maybe there's three of them, and then that way they wouldn't have to mow around three trees. They'd only have to mow around this bed.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a place to do that, I think that would be easier for them to maintain if they're sort of all together. So I think crab apples would be a good suggestion. Even some of the smaller flowering trees, things like red buds and some of those, I think probably with most of the places, they'd probably just as soon have something that's a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I think so too.
So probably along those lines. So you're looking at small flowering trees would be my thought.
Yeah, probably. Second question, this has to do with my garden. I put a bunch of compost from my compost heap into the garden soil, then I transplanted some plants that needed dividing, and several different kinds of plants, coral bells, lilies, and they're looking kind of yellow. And I'm wondering what I need to add that the compost might not have or might have too much in abundance of and needs balancing so that they won't look yellow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and you don't think it's just because maybe they dried out or just from being moved or...
Well, it's several different kinds, and actually I've got some native lilies that I moved from our farm in Ohio, and they've been yellow for 3 years, and I haven't been able to get them to not be yellow. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they're still alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it might be a couple things. I think you certainly could go ahead and fertilize them. I'm not sure I'd give them a whole lot of – well, actually, you could probably, if they're showing yellow, you might use just like a 10-10-10 or 12-12-12 or something along those lines. Usually compost, if it's truly composted, that's not going to be an issue, as in not enough nitrogen. But if the compost really wasn't completely finished, then there's always that possibility that maybe it's still, you know, using up some nitrogen that's in the soil and kind of robbing it from the plant. So that's certainly always a possibility if it's sort of still decomposing.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Well, I'm a lazy composter. I have two compost piles next to each other. And when one gets full, I start the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And when that one gets full, I empty the first one, tossing the stuff mm-hmm. on from the top layers of the one I'm emptying onto the newer compost because those are less composted. I don't ever turn it because I don't have time or energy.
Which is fine. I mean, there's no reason why you have to. I mean, it just takes longer, obviously,
yeah.
if you aren't turning them. But if you're taking it out and you can still see what it used to be,
mm-hmm.
as in still see, you know, leaves or stems or something, then it's not completely decomposed, which means it could, you know, actually be taking some nitrogen from the soil. So I'd wonder about just fertilizing. You may find that works out fairly quickly. If I was going to fertilize, I'd probably do it real soon here because you don't really want to be fertilizing in the real heat of summer necessarily.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing you might think about doing is, especially since your lilies have had a problem on a regular basis, is getting a soil test and see what's going on.
Okay.
You may find there's something else there.
I'd like to ask you for your column, not to take up more time here, that sometime you talk about garlic mustard and that the master gardeners consider a garden tour at some other season like spring or fall.
Mm-hmm.
The other kinds.
Yeah, you know, we've thought about that in the spring and fall, but then we run into things like, you know, bad weather, iffy weather.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, in the springtime, sometimes we have an early spring, sometimes we have a late spring. So sometimes, I understand what you're saying, but sometimes it's a little bit,
yeah.
It's tougher to do those spring ones. We'd have to do sort of short notice one, a little phone tree and everybody.
Thanks a bunch.
Okay,
right.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Let's see, we got next somebody up here ready to go in Danville. Line two.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for taking my call. I would like to know if Sandy would know how to keep ants out of hummingbird feeders.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've heard a couple things. Actually, at the bird store, I guess, the wildlife store, whatever you call it, I got these little red cups.
Yeah.
And you put water in them, and
yeah.
it hangs above your bird feed above the hummingbird feeder,
yeah.
and then you keep water in it, and then they'll try to get to the hummingbird feeder, but then the water keeps them from getting to them, and that seems to work real well for me. So that's it, just and it's fairly inexpensive. The other thing that I've read is to use Vaseline.
I've done that, and it does not work.
Yeah,
they're still in those little holes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's somehow they're getting to it, but you're putting it on like the chain or whatever you've got that's hanging.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're still getting on it.
Yeah.
Oh, must be jumping. I don't know what they're doing. But I would try those. Those little red cup things have worked out really well.
Do they have a name? Like
I wish they're specifically meant to be used with hummingbird feeders.
Oh.
And it's just a little red cup, and it's got like an eye hook on both ends, and so you just basically hang it in between your feeder and the branch or whatever that you have.
And how big are they?
They're about the size of about an 8 ounce cup.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. Uh-huh. I look for them. Thank you very much.
Right. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
And we certainly would welcome other questions about the things that grow in the home landscape. Sandy Mason is here from U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month, always on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden questions. And if you're having some problem or you're looking for a plant suggestion, you can give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Someone called in with an off-the-air question and wanted to know, what can you do to control borers on a white fringe tree?
Oh, they actually have borers on a white fringe tree. We probably need to figure out which borer right offhand. I don't know of a borer that attacks white fringe trees.
And I've just been sitting here on the web looking at different websites that mention white fringe, and there were a whole bunch of them here, but none of them mention characteristic disease or insect problems. So I'm not, you know, they all describe the habitat and the tree and what it looks like, but I haven't seen any, and I've now looked at maybe five or six, and none of them say anything about borers.
Yeah. I think the one thing with a lot of the borers, for the most part, is, you know, they're generally attracted to stressed plants anyway. So a lot of times your best bet, one of the things to do is just to get the, you know, find out why the tree is stressed. You know, got a lot of worries, a lot of bills. No. Why, you know, maybe it's drought, maybe it's, you know, different things going on in the area, poor pH soil or something going on. So you may want to find out if it's just not growing very well because of that, because it's usually why the borers are coming in. And so that would be one thing that I would think about. We can check in my office if they want to give me a call at 217-333-7672, and I'd be glad to do a little bit more searching. But as you said, I just don't know one right offhand that's going to be attacking fringe trees. So, and what you may even want to do is to go ahead and just remove those stems that are being attacked, and then try to help the health of the tree and then see if that doesn't help.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
yeah, I just don't know
that's
any.
Probably about the best we can do right at the moment. Further questions are welcome. In fact, we have some other folks here who are ready to go. And with somebody on cell phone, that's line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I had a question about a lilac bush.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bush that's on our back lot line. It gets a lot of sun. But prior to planting the bush, there were several pine trees that the power company came in and cut down.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of pine needles in the soil. We've had the lilac bush for approximately 8 years, and this is the first year we've gotten any flowers at all that I can recall, and it's like only one or two blooms. I was wondering if the soil is changed because of the pine trees or if we're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you prune it at all?
Well, it was just a small bush when we got it,
mm-hmm.
and now it's probably 4 foot or 5 feet high.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't been doing any pruning, or?
Well, we pruned it back at the. I think my wife. You know, I don't know anything about plants. I have to apologize, but my wife, I think, prunes it back in the fall.
Okay, that's probably the problem right there. The lilacs are like forsythia, and a lot of the spring bloomers, they put on their flower buds the year before. So if you prune them in the fall, you're pruning off the flower buds.
Oh, I see.
So you have to prune them like right now, right after they've bloomed. That's when you prune them.
I see.
And then they'll have a chance to go ahead and put on their flower buds, because that's usually, a lot of times if things just aren't blooming, maybe they're being pruned at the wrong time, or maybe the flower buds are just not making it through the winter for one reason or another. Usually lilacs, that's not an issue, but sometimes that, you know, if it's really, really cold. But that's certainly an old enough plant that you should be seeing some good flowering on it. So I'd watch when you prune it. That'd probably be one thing. You may want to think about using like a 5-10-10 or something like that fertilizer, although it sounds like it's growing just fine. You know, mulch it, water it during drought, you know, really try to increase the vigor of the plant. But I almost bet it's a pruning problem.
The soil won't be a problem with the...
It really shouldn't be an issue because around here, you certainly could get a soil test. Lilacs are pretty tolerant of a wide range of soil pH, so that really shouldn't be a big deal for them. But you certainly could get a soil test done to see what else is going on there. But it sounds like it's growing okay. Pardon?
Everything else seems to be growing.
Yeah,
here, so it's
right.
Probably okay.
Right. So I don't think that's probably an issue. But so I'd watch when you're pruning it.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you for the call. Matt Toon next, line number four. Hello.
Good morning. I have a couple of things. One, the lady who called with the ant and the hummingbird feeder problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been putting up with that for years, and finally this year found a product that is safe and non-toxic. It's called Tree Tanglefoot Pest
mm-hmm.
Barrier,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it's basically camphor and ether and an extremely castor oil in an incredibly sticky format.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can just take a popsicle stick and smear a little of that anywhere along the path where the ants get to the feeder, like if it's hanging from a branch, the branch right around,
mm-hmm.
it's used to protect trees, so it's not going to hurt plants or anything. The ants won't go near it, and the ones that are brave enough to get stuck and they can't get past. And every so often, as it catches up the dust and such, you just scrape it off and put on some fresh, and it is, I haven't had an ant since.
Oh, that's a good idea. So, yeah, Tanglefoot. And you should be able to find that, I would think, in most garden center-type places, even probably farm supply places would probably handle it.
I got it in a seed and feed store that I deal with down
there. Yeah,
there
you go. So, good suggestion.
And then the question I have is, we have a patch of mint on the north side of our house, and it grows very well. It's very happy there, except for the last two or three years, it gets up so big, and then a number of the leaves start getting little dark spots on them.
Hmm.
And the number of spots increase, the leaf just kind of curls up. And also, it's on the north side of the house, and when I go to water, a lot of times I scare up a number of small bugs, and I'm wondering if this isn't insect infestation.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, or if you have another idea of what it could be, how to treat it and still not make the mint unusable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is this getting sun at all, being on the north side?
Not a lot of direct sun, no. Yeah, it's almost all indirect, although our house is light. The house 10 feet away is light, and so there's a lot of reflected light
there. Well, I would wonder, probably the first thing I'd wonder about is actually disease problems, because sometimes, especially if you have a really thick patch, and if you're doing overhead irrigation, or just the fact that it's so humid and those kind of things, sometimes we start getting some leaf disease problems. And so I wonder, if, especially when you say there's spots, that's a pretty good indication that we might be seeing a fungal disease of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what you might want to do, now, where are you located? Are you?
Mattoon.
You could certainly check with, is that Coles County?
Uh-huh.
Coles County Extension does have a Master Gardener program, and so
right.
you may want to check with the Coles County Extension and maybe bring in a sample and see if you can see what's going on. And they could certainly probably also tell you whether it might be an insect problem. You've hit on the other thing, obviously, if you're using this and eating it or using it in tea or whatever, you're going to have to really watch what you end up putting on it.
Right.
So I think what I might think, is there any way to open it up or maybe thin it out a little bit, you know, do some division so that actually, you know, goes ahead and the leaves might actually dry out a little bit, or when you water, don't water the leaves, those kind of things to try to keep the leaves dry? Is that a possibility?
Well, it'd be awfully hard not to get the leaves wet, but it could probably be thinned.
That might help, sometimes just thinning, or if you can do, just use a soaker hose or something where you're not going to actually do overhead irrigation. Sometimes that will help, too.
All righty. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
All right. Thank you for the call. And again, the lines are free. If folks want to call in with a question, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a clarification on the borer question, and I guess, I don't know if we had a little miscommunication or something, but because the caller called back and said this was an ash that they were talking about. They want to talk about ash borer. So that's this is a whole different deal.
Different ball of wax, all right. Still, although we are, you know, on the lookout for emerald ash borer, it's still a lot of the stuff I just said is that usually they do come in on stressed trees for the most part. And I can check here real quick to see if I can find out as far as some timing on those, because you could actually, if someone wanted to use a spray, you could actually go ahead and use a spray on that. But I'll maybe we could go ahead and take another call, and I'll look here real quick.
And that is one of the things that also, when Phil was here the last time, we talked a little bit about, and I thought that he said, I'm not sure where the caller was calling from, but that I don't think that we have seen in Champaign County, we've seen any ash borer. I thought this was something
correct.
That was pretty much to the north of us, but maybe as close as Michigan. Do I sort of remember that?
Right, it's in the northern right now, and hopefully it stays up there.
Yeah,
but we don't necessarily.
Yeah, because it's really a bad. If you get it in your ash, it's really a bad deal. And so we would not want to see that spread to here. We might end up losing a lot of trees.
And actually, it does look like this would be a good, as far as timing for that, is mid-June. So that's, and then to repeat again in 2 weeks later.
Okay. And what is it that they're...
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Probably, I'm trying to think of what they could actually use on that, since we've lost several of our different products. Probably imidacloprid would be one of them that we might think of. And I'm just, I need to look at the probably the newer recommendation. So maybe they can give us a call.
Very good.
217-333-7672. But if you go into the Garden Center store and ask for a borer spray, we used to use the Dursban type products, but those are off the market now. So unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of options there.
Okay.
But that would be one thing. And this would be the time to go ahead and spray those. But to keep the plant healthy, that is the other thing.
And probably it would be, if you can, if you have the time, it would be a good idea to try and make sure that that is what the problem is.
Right.
Don't treat for something that you actually don't really have.
Right.
So
right.
If you can have somebody look at it, or if you can, I don't know if that would be the kind of thing where you could actually take something into a extension person near you, or of course if they're here in Champaign-Urbana, there's a plant clinic people can take stuff too,
or just take a picture even sometimes. Just taking a picture of the holes or whatever, sometimes that helps. And ash certainly do get borers. I mean, certainly it's a possibility that they might have borers, other borers, not the emerald ash, but they certainly get some other borers.
Okay. On to Urbana, another caller here, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling about we have a small tree that I believe it's a crabapple or choke cherry that is exhibiting. There's several leaves that have turned yellow, and they have brown spots on them, and some of the green leaves also have faint brown spots on them.
Mm-hmm. I would, if it's a crabapple, I'd almost bet it's probably apple scab, which is a fungal disease.
Okay.
Have you noticed this in the past? Have you seen it before?
Haven't seen it before, no.
Okay.
Just in the last, just the last few weeks.
Oh, okay. But I mean, in years past, had it done it?
No.
Before. And it is fairly common. The reason I ask is if you've seen it before, in that some of the crabapple trees do not show good resistance to apple scab. So that's always a possibility with some of them. If you get a disease-resistant variety, then most of the time we're not going to have a problem unless there's really a severe disease pressure. So that would be one thing that I would think of. Unfortunately, you're too late. It's a fungus disease, and it has to be, if you're going to use a fungicide, it'd have to have been done when the leaves were first expanding. So you're really too late for this year. I guess the good news is, if that's truly what it is apple scab, it's not life-threatening. That's the good news.
Oh, so it's just not going to, it's going to look crappy this year.
That's the technical term. That's what we write down. No, with apple scab, generally what we see is that the leaves, they turn yellow and they fall off. And sometimes in July and August, you don't see a whole lot of leaves on the tree. But they seem to be able to, if it's a halfway healthy tree, they seem to be able to recover fairly quickly from it. But you'd want to, if it's really stressed, it's not good, obviously. So you might want to water it during drought periods, those kind of things. But most of the time, it's not going to be life-threatening. And again, if you wanted to, take a sample of a plant clinic or take it to your local extension office, they could give you a better idea if it's truly apple scab or not.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. We have about 15 minutes left here with Sandy Mason, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. This is a show that we do every month. We start in the spring, go through the summer, into the fall. Second Tuesday of the month, she is here, and it's just an opportunity to call in and talk about plant matters. If you're having a problem, you can call and tell us about that. Maybe you're interested in some kind of suggestion for a particular plant for some place in your yard that you want to plant. Anything that has to do with things that grow in the home landscape or houseplants, we can do that too. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. And so here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next caller in line is in Champaign, and that's line one. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Have a problem with grass growing between the bricks. We've bricked the patio, and we're just fighting constantly. What would you suggest we do other than concrete it?
Yeah, I think it just seems like they're coming up from seed, or is it actually like bluegrass kind of working its way in?
It's seeds and weeds and everything.
Just kind of seems like they're coming in. And probably, you know, it's one of those things that with brick sidewalks, you may get, especially if there's just sand in between, which I assume there must be,
yes.
you're always going to get a certain amount of weed seeds that are going to come in. But usually you can take care of it. You know, certainly something like some of the non-selective herbicides, you could certainly use those, like Roundup, any of those kind of things. You obviously have to read the directions and follow label directions and make sure you don't get it on anything you want to keep. But it's pretty good for those kinds of things. You also, I've even had fairly good luck with actually just a bleach solution on really young seedlings. Sometimes that's actually worked out really well too, and especially since you're just doing it on the brick, sometimes that's worked too.
That's good.
So you may want to think about that, but if you can get it to the point, sometimes if you can kind of beat it down for a while, then you'll find that just over a period of time, you just don't have nearly so many weed seeds. They finally sort of work their way to the point where you're not getting so many germinating.
How about the bleach solution? What percentage is it, and will it bleach the brick?
What I found is it basically kind of just cleaned them off for the most part, you know, especially which sometimes they can get a little slippery if there's a little algae or anything growing on them in the shade. And it, generally, I've just used, I used probably a 50% bleach solution.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And then next we'll go to Bourbon Ace, line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Uh-huh.
I live in a house that I rent. My landlord lives right next door, and he is a landscaper by trade. Between us, on our mutual property, we have 4 different mulberry trees. 3 of them are several years old, and the 4th one I think they just put in a little bit ago. 2 of them, the ones that are in more shade, are both doing pretty well. The other 2, including the oldest, which is, I don't know, 15 feet high at least, and the newest, which is maybe 6 feet high, are struggling. On the oldest one, which has beautiful yellow blossoms, although they've never been very profuse, about half the limbs are still bare.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half is leafed out okay, but it doesn't look good, and we pinched some buds off, and they're just hollow. They just crumble.
Mm-hmm. And when were these planted?
One of them, the one I just described, is 5 years old, mm-hmm. 5 years old. Mm-hmm.
And these are mulberries? Is that what you said?
Mulberry. I'm sorry, I meant magnolia.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think of a yellow-flowered mulberry, and why would you plant a mulberry anyway?
You're like, why would you plant a mulberry? That would
usually
be
they come
question.
Up on their own.
Yeah. When I plant them. They're delicious. Mulberries are delicious.
Yeah, right. If they're where you want them to be, then they're great. Okay, magnolia. Okay, a little different story.
Sorry.
I there's certainly ones that they don't, you know, they don't like drought for one thing. So I don't know. Do these get watered periodically?
Oh, yeah,
even?
You know, it's poured here the last couple weeks. We've had all kinds of rain.
Okay. Well, at least in my area, it's been dry for probably the last 3 weeks, which is enough time that they would dry out. So that'd be one thing I'd wonder about. Or if, you know, there's any concerns about it getting too wet. I mean, I would almost bet it's some sort of environmental thing going on there where they're just not getting established or something's happening right there. You might even want to get a soil test to see what's going on.
Okay. He kind of wants to cut it down. And I'd rather he didn't. I'd rather give it a chance. But, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Or is there anything that we can do other than water?
Your best bet is to water. I mean, just water during drought periods and just try to let the tree do what it needs to do. With a lot of the trees, you know, you really have to evaluate it. You know, if I've got this much, you know, dieback or dead branches on it and I remove those, which, you know, any of the dead branches should be removed, you know, what is the tree going to look like? And is it still going to be a quality tree? Yeah. So that's what you have to, and it's probably a landscaper he's looking at it that way.
Well, I'm sure he is. Thank you. I have a similar situation at my lady's house. She lives in a condo up in Palos Heights, which is a suburb of Chicago, and it's on a pond. And right between her, right on the edge of the pond, you know, in front of her house, is an old maple. I mean, not ancient, but full height maple.
Mm-hmm.
And it's leafed out very sparsely,
mm-hmm.
and I heard somebody else say that there are a couple problems that, it could have.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me with that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, with some of the maples, they get a wilt disease called verticillium.
Verticillium.
I know. It sounds like a disease, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It sounds like something you'd find in a microscope.
Yeah, really. And unfortunately, it seems to happen on some of those older ones. You know, as they age, they get this. And usually what you'll see is, you know, this year this limb doesn't leaf out. And then the next year that limb doesn't leaf out. And you kind of get this sort of slow decline over time. And it is, unfortunately, it's one of those things we can't do a whole lot about. Generally, I know you're probably getting sick of hearing this, but just, you know, trying to, you know, water during drought periods, try to keep the tree as healthy as you can is really about your best bet, if that's truly what it is. But it would be something probably a professional arborist needs to take a look at, it because you need to get the dead wood out of there anyway. So
I haven't studied it quite in the way you just described, but it doesn't look to me like there are some limbs that are bare and others that are leafed. It seems like the whole tree has leafed sparsely.
Yeah, yeah. Which could be declined for other reasons, too. I don't know if they've done anything. Like some of those old trees, sometimes as they built houses or condos or whatever, they backfill and they put a whole bunch of soil on top where it shouldn't be. Sometimes that can be a slow decline kind of thing, which is almost what this sounds like. It's just declining for one reason or another. So I'd look at the trunk. It shouldn't go into the ground like a telephone pole. It should have a natural flare to it. If it doesn't have a natural flare, then somewhere along the line they've added soil to it, and that's not good. Not good at all. So I would just look for those kind of things and see if you can figure out what's going on.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
I wish I could give
calling.
You a magic wand.
We'll try and get a few more callers in here. We have about, maybe 3-4 minutes with Sandy Mason, a woman who definitely has natural flair.
I'm not sure how to take that. I mean, you could. Oh, no.
333-WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. Bloomington is next, line 2. Hello? Yes.
Hi. My question is, I have 4 Nico Blue hydrangea bushes that have always been pink, and I've put muriatic acid on them. And I'm just wondering if my timing is off, and that's why I can't get them blue. If there's a certain time period you're supposed to put it on, or do you put it on once every 2 weeks? Or I never hear specifics on exactly how you're supposed to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm. You probably really need to use something like aluminum sulfate on the soil. Rather than just using, because I assume this is just a liquid, you're just putting it in the the water. Yeah, you really need to do more than that with these guys, because you really need to try to change the soil is what you're trying to do. And so aluminum sulfate is something you do, and you probably only do that like a couple times a year. Probably should have been done when they were planted, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
You know, actually mix it within the soil and then plant them.
So an additive probably won't work then.
It gets harder because it's, you know, obviously you're just affecting the top surface of the soil rather than down below, which is really what should have been done. So if it's, you know, and if it's one of those things that maybe you might want to, if it hasn't been in there very long, you might want to dig it up and, you know, change the soil, add peat moss, make sure there's a lot of organic matter, put in your aluminum sulfate. It'd be great if you could do a soil test, too, to find out what's going on and make sure you know where the pH is and that kind of thing.
But either that or just be happy with pink flowers.
Or just be happy with pink. Pink is good. Pink is good.
Okay. So aluminum sulfate. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very
much. I have a hydrangea. It's been on the ground for a couple of years. It's supposed to have pink flowers. It's never flowered at all. I'd be happy if it would make pink flowers. Pink is fine. I just like to see some flowers. And I tell it to that plant. I say, look, what is up with you?
You're out of here.
I don't make threats.
No. Oh, really?
But
I just
compare it to all the nice plants around it and say, they're doing very well. Can't you learn something here from them?
Yeah. No. Hydrangeas really are tough in that they do, you know, especially the pinks and blue ones, they bloom on old wood. So if you don't have wood from the previous year, as in it dies back or you cut it off at the wrong time, then you get all kinds of foliage and no flowers. It has to have that old wood. There is a new one now called Endless Summer that blooms on new wood and old wood both. So that's like the in thing now in hydrangeas. You don't have to worry about if the flower buds don't make it through the winter because it blooms on the new wood. So there you go. All else fails.
Well, let's go to Champagne, line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Quick question. My husband transplanted a lilac bush maybe about a couple months ago. It was just at the end of blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's turned brown now. And those stems are still pretty resilient.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't brittle or anything, but the but all the leaves and everything are brown, so we don't know what to do now.
Well, I would not give up on it. Lilacs are generally pretty tough.
Okay.
And what I would do, and if you say that, you know, if you can just scrape the stem with your thumbnail, and if it still looks green under there, or look at the buds to see if they still look plump, then even if it's browned up completely, there's still a good chance that it will go ahead and leaf out again.
Okay. So do we prune it back, or do we do anything like that?
I would just wait. Just leave it as it is.
Okay.
And then, watering. Boy, that's the theme for today is watering during drought periods. But it really is. You know, it's like everything. You gotta have a healthy plant for it to really do well. So I would start watering it on a regular basis and then see what happens. I certainly would not give up on it. Would not give up on it.
Okay. And then we have a brand new, not a brand new, it's a 20-year-old pear tree retransplanted.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
It did really well. We did it in the fall, and it weathered the winter, and it bloomed, blossomed. It was gorgeous in the spring. But now it seems a little thin, and we're not sure if that's kind of typical, because the arborist who did it said it would take a couple of years before it really set in. And, you know, the leaves are glossy. We water it, and it looks fine, other than it looks thin now that all the blooms are gone.
Sure. I think it's fine. I mean, I think it's wonderful that you've gotten it this far, because that's a fairly old tree to be moving. So I think that's fine. And certainly this year, to have it a little thin is not a big deal.
Okay.
So I just continue with
watering.
Good care.
Okay.
Continue with good care, and I think it should be fine.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Well, there we will have to leave it, because we've come to the end of the time. Folks here in and around Champaign, Urbana, Champaign County, do remember the Champaign County Master Gardener's Garden Walk on Father's Day, Sunday, June 20th. Tickets are necessary. Cost a couple of dollars for you there, but I think you probably enjoy that. So where can people get tickets?
People can get tickets all over the place. Any of the local garden centers, you should be able to find tickets for the here in Champaign-Urbana.
Okay.
Real easy. Also the Extension office.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
She'll be back with us again. By that time, we'll be well into July.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
I'm sure it'll be lovely.
I'm sure. Programming here on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. We are coming up to an election this year, and we here at WILL are planning election coverage. We hope we'll add some depth and insight to the headlines. Important decisions will be made this year. We hope that you will make the decision now to help us raise the money that we still need to meet our June 30th fundraising goal. And the last figure we have is $161,700. That's how much we need. Reaching the goal will ensure that the resources are available to bring you in-depth election year coverage. You can call us and make a contribution. The number is 217-244-9455. Or if you're online, you can just point your browser to our website, will.uiuc.edu, and make a credit card contribution. So again, 217-244-9455 if you want to call, or go to the website, will.uiuc.edu. Whichever way you make a contribution, we say thank you very much. Coming up in the next hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about Douglas Farah. He's an investigative reporter, has worked for the Washington Post. He's author of a new book that looks at the financing of terror. It's titled Blood from Stones. That'll be up in the next part of the show. First, though, we'll take a break for news and update on the markets, so please stay tuned.
Up to September, 374 and a half, up a half.